This is Packer and Durham on ACCM and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Lots of stuff coming your way. Mr. Durham, how are you on this crazy Friday morning?
Pack, I'm doing well. It kind of FYI, it started raining here about 3 hours ago, and I feel like the arc is coming around the corner any minute. As we get ready for the weekend, the beautiful weather of 70-plus degrees here in northwest Georgia has started to trend downward, as they say. But elsewise, pretty good. And you know what? We've got some encouraging news about the state of North Carolina and their health perspective here that we can cover. But all in all, ready for a good weekend of ACC basketball, too.
It's a very important weekend. We'll get into all the games, break those down for you. But I know it's coming down sideways in the ATL right now. It's surely heading our way right up I-85. But the party was happening right here at the Packer House last night. As we mentioned yesterday, Greg Packer celebrating a big birthday. And I figured that, you know, you guys offered me a challenge after the show yesterday. And so you said, can you get Billy Packer to wear the Demon Deacon top hat? Can I get him to do it? A couple of glasses of red wine, and look what happens. How about that? Billy Packer with the Wake Forest Demon Deacon ball and hat, and was holding the ACC whistle. So that is ACC history in the making, as a Billy celebrated big number 8-1 last night here at the house. So there you go. You asked, I delivered.
That is awesome. Great to see Billy. Hope you guys had a great birthday celebration for your mom and dad last night. That when you texted that picture last night, the phone popped up and I just started laughing. And Vicky goes, what is it? And I turned and showed her the picture and she goes, oh my goodness. That's right. Oh my goodness. So nice job, Pack. Well done.
Yeah, I'm not sure if the Wake Forest will use that in the media guide next year as one of their famed alums. But nevertheless, Billy and Barb had a big time last night, which was really the most important thing. So there you go. You asked, I deliver.
That's awesome. That is awesome. A couple of news items here for you. By the way, LaChana Robinson also got a hat. That went to social media yesterday. Jen Hoover, fulfilled her obligation. She got LaChana Robinson, who played at Wake Forest, of course. She was not happy you had gotten a hat before her, but she finally got one now. Huh? There you go. Congratulations to LaChana there. There's the video of that.
Well, you know, I'm glad LaChana got it, but I mean, I kind of sensed a little angst towards me. Like, you know, what are you going to do now, Pac? Well, hey, I was rooting for her. I wanted her to get the hat. She should have gotten one before I did. I mean, don't blame me for that bad boy. I'm just glad LaChana's got that bad boy on the shelf, though. That's good. Everybody should be happy now.
Yeah.
I get the Deeks a W.
Yeah, no question. Hey, we had a little bit of 10:05 yesterday in a couple of different areas. Word came from Dr. Mandy Cohen, who is the state health officer in North Carolina, chief medical officer, about the, if you will, the easing of protocols around the coronavirus in the state as it relates to large gatherings. That coincided with releases from the University of North Carolina and the ACC yesterday afternoon about the potential of fans being allowed to not only go to the ACC tournament, but effective today, Pack, over in Chapel Hill at the University of North Carolina, there will be fans allowed. It starts today, actually, with women's lacrosse at Carolina. But the bigger news, obviously, is the Smith Center for Saturday's basketball game with Florida State. And I got a little bit of clarity last night about this, and I want to go through here briefly about this and then what maybe we expect from the ACC as it relates to this, too. Number one, Carolina, the maximum number of fans is going to be just a touch more than 3,000. Now, one of the things that's going to occur out of this is it's obviously going to be limited and there'll be some sort of priority, but it's going to obviously be families of players and coaches and staff. Okay, that's number one in Chapel Hill. Second part is 75% of that 3,000 is going to be students. The rest of it is going to be UNC healthcare staff. Now, you talk about importance, right? I mean, and I think the NFL took the lead on this a little bit with the Super Bowl, but you're going to see healthcare folks from UNC Hospital and the surrounding areas who get an opportunity to come in and see these ball games. Now, granted, it's not going to be very many because, again, it's capped at 3,000 in a 21,000-seat building. There will be some donors there, but there'll be no public sale, and all venues at the University of North Carolina are going to have some percentage of capacity for fans to see athletic events, at least for the time being. And that's great news in the state of North Carolina. The ACC acknowledged that they are also going to allow some fans too, a limited number of fans for both the women's and the men's basketball tournament, but no real details have been shared yet by the Atlantic Coast Conference as to what those plans are going to be.
The more, the merrier, Wes. As long as everybody's safe and the protocols are met, I'm all for it. I mean, who wouldn't be? I think we're all eagerly anticipating, hopefully by getting to the fall, that we can kind of get back to what we normally would expect for a college football game or an NFL game or, you know, whatever makes you happy, Major League Baseball. So this is a small step, certainly, in the right direction. We're making progress. The vaccine's certainly helping from that perspective, but we still have to do the same thing we've been talking about for 11 and a half months, and that is wear your mask, wash your hands, social distance. All that still remains the same, even with the vaccine. So, to me, this is all good news. And again, the more people that we can have in these arenas to watch these games, whether it be the ACC tournament or up to, what, 25% for the NCAA tournament and all the venues, the more the merrier. So, I mean, this is all encouraging signs. So, that's all good.
Yeah, the NCAA stuff came out as well yesterday. Did you sense any surprises there from Dan Gavitt and his committee about the way they're going to roll and replace here in the NCAA tournaments?
Wes, when I read it, I was like, well, of course. I mean, I don't mean to be a jerk about this. What else could they do? I mean, what was plan B other than, hey, if somebody gets COVID and we got to pause, was it just a free game? I mean, you got to have somebody in the bullpen, right? I mean, so I think this is, to me, this was kind of common sense that anything other than this would have been newsworthy. So, I'm glad they laid it out there so we all know what it is. You know, we're 16 days away from Selection Sunday. But, I mean, this is how it had to be, if that makes any sense whatsoever. So, I just hope we can get this thing jump-started on time, and I hope that we can somehow get to both San Antonio and Indianapolis respectively and have four teams that have earned the right to be there and conclude a season. But something still tells me this is not going to be a straight line. Just doesn't feel like we can do that.
No. No, I'm with you on that part. I will tell you that one thing did kind of trigger off the announcement of the NCAA. So, now go with me here for a second. We've got these replacement teams, right? And they're not going to announce the replacement teams till about 48 hours before the field is announced, okay? And then based on what the NCAA said yesterday, if hypothetically, let's say the four seed, you know, the four is going to play, what is it, the 13, I guess, or however, four plays 13. So you get, let's say, all of a sudden the four ends up and they got to get out of the field. So of the replacement teams, now the 13 has got to feel like, okay, we're going to play somebody of comparable ability, right? Maybe, maybe not. Who knows? But also the replacement team that comes in gets plugged into the four spot. Was that replacement team the 69th team, the 67th, whatever it was, how does that replacement team factor into it? And oh, by the way, has the replacement team, who has no guarantee they're going to play, do they get credit for an NCAA tournament appearance as a replacement team? There was all sorts of stuff that triggered when I read about, you know, how they were going to go about doing this.
Well, let's play the what if game. What if the four replacement teams, the ones in the bullpen, that are waiting for the call when somebody unfortunately has a pause? How about if the four replacement teams are North Carolina, Duke, Kentucky, and Michigan State? I mean, just let that marinate a second, how goofy and bizarro world that would be. That all of a sudden, the four that, bizarre. You know, they just didn't get it done in the regular season. It closed, didn't quite get it. But those are the four in the bullpen. And all of a sudden,
yeah.
You know, you're cruising in there. You think you got, man, I'm looking at the brackets. We're in great shape. We're going to play this team. And, you know, they're a 12 seed. They're not that good. Or they're a 13 seed. And all of a sudden, the 13 seed team gets a pause. I'm sorry.
Right.
Go to the bullpen. Here comes Duke.
Mm-hmm.
Go to the bullpen for the 13. Here comes North Carolina. Can you imagine going, what? I got to go play these guys? Yeah. I mean, this is how weird the year's been. So what makes you think we can't have another round of weirdness once this tournament gets started? I hope not, but it's certainly there.
Sure. And you bring up a great point, by the way, because I think that's the Duke, Carolina, Kentucky, Michigan State. Wouldn't that be an appropriate four? Oh my gosh. There's just no way there's a straight line. There's no way there's a straight line. If there is, then bless us all, because that will be the biggest upset of the last 6 months for sure.
Well, I think we're all rooting for it, but I think, you know, we've now lived through a football season and a vast majority of a basketball season, the two major revenue producing sports, that we have seen enough craziness in terms of game day cancellations, postponements. You thought you're going to get this game. Next thing you know, your whole week is wiped out. Next thing you know, you're wiped out for 2 weeks because of contact tracing. I mean, like all of a sudden, we're going to snap our fingers on March 18th and all of that goes away like it's never happened before. So I think all of us are at least now prepared to be flexible and have that, you know, we keep hearing the word nimble and flexible and, you know, the ability to adapt. Well, I don't think there's any question that when March 18th gets cranked up for March Madness, knock on wood, that, you know, you got to prepare yourself to think that there's going to be at least an instance where that potentially could happen. I hope it doesn't. It would be awesome if we can somehow get through it with 68 teams and we play it just like it's laid out there. But I look what the NCAA's announcement was yesterday. Really was common sense. They've got to at least prepare themselves that if in case there's some type of disruption, there is a plan in place. And now you at least know what it is. And again, I it made a ton of sense to me. I'm not sure there could have ever been even another plan. You know, you can't do a thing where, hey, if the four seed has a COVID pause, everybody from 5 through 15 moves up a notch. It doesn't work that way. So I thought the NCAA actually did the right thing yesterday with the announcement and at least their approach to trying to get this tournament in.
No, no question about that. You had to come up with something, and they put at least contingencies out there the best they can. They've already announced a lot of the travel elements that are in place for these participating teams and things of that nature. So we wish them all the best. One more piece of news here as it relates to ACC basketball. Yesterday afternoon, a day after Xavier Johnson entered the transfer portal, Audis Toney has now entered the transfer portal as well at the University of Pittsburgh. The second and third best player on Jeff Capel's team are now in the portal. And Packett may come as a surprise to some. Toney, who had taken to social media, you know, I don't know, 14 months ago, talking about, you know, the potential of maybe going on. And then Johnson, who had also done some things social media wise. And, you know, there's obviously some distractions going on in the Pittsburgh program. We'll want to keep an eye on them Sunday afternoon as they play at NC State, a team they just lost to. You know, young people making decisions here. I don't sense, to be honest with you, from watching them play, that there are any inherent cultural problems with what Jeff Capel's program is at Pittsburgh. And these are two guys who have made, in some ways, independent decisions, just done it in consecutive days at this point, it sounds like to me. From the reading and things of that nature, that's what it seems like, although on paper it does not look good.
Well, it's not good. I mean, you can't lose to your top three scorers, and we've got 10 days until the season ends. I mean, none of that makes any good headlines in which you say, oh, yeah, we're okay. I don't know what's going on behind closed doors, and that's up to Coach Capel. He's paid handsomely to take care of business. All I know is when you see basically 28 points a game, five assists and five rebounds a game go walking out the door for a team that's lost 7 of 8 coming down the stretch, that's not a good thing. Justin Champagne, in my opinion, is going to be your ACC Player of the Year. He's had a great year. Pitt has been a disappointment down the stretch. That's being mildly kind. This is disturbing, needless to say. But I say it from day one, whether it be Jalen Johnson or Xavier Johnson, whatever. Hey, you're entitled to make your decision. And it, hopefully it works out for you one way or the other. The old school in me is like, hey, you know what? You signed up to be a part of a team. Finish the job, especially this late. You know, next weekend, the regular season ends. I mean, could it have hurt you to hang around for another week? Just ask it. I don't know what's going on behind the scenes with Pitt, but on the surface, it's not good. You can't lose that kind of talent in back-to-back days this late into the season and go, oh, we're okay. You know, we'll go get ready to go play NC State. Well, hey, you know, if you still have Pitt on the schedule, you're licking your chops. But, man, this is these are not the headlines that you want late February, early March, if you're running a basketball program or anything else for that matter.
The optics are bad. The intent now is to, if you're Jeff Capel and that staff, to now put together, you know, a roster. You're going to have plenty of options, you know, to refortify, if you will, with transfers and grads and not only your own recruiting. But you're right. You've got potentially the ACC Player of the Year on the roster. You know, and you got some young guys that have helped out, but there's clearly going to be needs now. Jeff Capel was quoted last night on his radio show as talking about, hey, I look at it as it gives us two more scholarships to go out and get guys who want to be here and be part of what we're doing along with the guys we have. And that's the end of the quote from the Panthers head coach. As I said, 4 o'clock Saturday afternoon, you'll see them, or Sunday afternoon rather, you'll see them here on ACC Network against NC State in Raleigh. So that puts a wrap on the opening segment. We've got plenty to go here on a Friday. In case you missed it with Coach Mike Krzyzewski coming up, but Pack, another big show on the way today. Chris Cotter's Packer and Durham debut officially occurs today on this program.
Well, you know, he during the football season, he made it very clear on the air on Saturdays, every time there was a Packer and Durham promo, which, by the way, I hear happens quite a bit, that Cotter would make a reference that, man, you know, why don't they call me? Well, you know, everybody else seems to be on this show, but they never call me. And I'm not sensing there was a little anguish there, but, you know, he was kind of felt like he was left out of the party. And there was never any ill will from our end. I mean, we like Cotter. In fact, he's been on before. But he just,
that's right,
he just wants to be kind of like part of the clique. And so we got no issue with it. And on top of that, it's a huge weekend with lacrosse. And not only does he know football and basketball, but he knows lacrosse too. So Cotter will be on here. Yeah. He will be entertaining. And again, there's no ill will from our end. We like everybody being on here.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Tons of guests. But Wes, you know, yesterday the power hour alone was loaded, almost worthy of a part two today.
Yeah, no question. Both Leonard Hamilton and Mike Krzyzewski joined us in the last hour of Thursday's program. Coach K, always great with his time, always good conversation. And we started by asking him, what's been the biggest change in your team here in the last couple of weeks?
I think the maturity of and learning experience of playing, you know, tough games. We've lost a lot of really close games against, you know, really good teams in our league, and those are games that you would have hoped to have played in November and December in non-conference in a normal year and even exhibition. And so the maturity process of the team takes longer, you know, it takes longer during this season. And we're the fifth youngest team in the NCAA and youngest in Power Five. So they're getting better. They've, I've said this even while we were losing, that we have good kids and they work hard, and we're just going to keep at it and see what happens. And we're getting better, and hopefully we can stay healthy and continue to get better.
Coach, is it the same once you dive into the details of a young team? Does that mean that the guards are going to take a little longer? And we always hear the old adage that bigs take longer to mature. So we're seeing the emergence of a youngster like a Mark Williams. But Stewart and Roach, to me, and I told Pac this the other day, I think Stewart and Roach are as directly responsible for your improvement as anybody, just watching them get better in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, well, they're all, you know, we don't have – they're all responsible for it. And I don't know if you can generalize that guards or bigs or, you know, it just depends who they are. I mean, Vernon Carey adjusted really well as a freshman big. Yeah. Tommy Amaker, I mean, we have freshman guards do it. It's just each kid's different. Each team's different. I will say this, that a lot depends on who you're playing with. And this team is young overall. You know, even the veterans who came back, we only had four. They were Goldwire. Jordan was the only one who started more games. But, you know, Matt and Wendell, you know, they didn't start every game last year. So you had a lot of maturing going on. And so when the young guys don't have those pillars with them right away, you got guys who, older guys who are developing too. So just a kind of a unique year for us. But not a bad year, a good year. It's a developing year. And I've really been impressed with how hard and how committed our guys have been.
Coach, you, after the game at Miami, which you went on the road and lost, and we, all of us kind of thought you'd kind of turn the corner after the wins against Georgia Tech and Clemson. Quick turnaround, you go to Miami, lose the game, and afterwards you said, you know what, I didn't like our practice, and your practices are legendary. Have you noticed anything, or did you pick up on anything in a practice prior to this run where you said, hey, you know what, yeah, I know we're struggling, we're trying to figure this thing out, and everybody's developing, but was there a practice or a moment where you got a sense of, hey, we're about ready to turn on and go to another level here? Was there ever a sign for you with this?
I think it just, not one day, you know, when you talk about the weekend when we beat Clemson and then on Monday lost to Miami, it was tough to have a great practice on Sunday because you traveled. You know, it's a travel day. And, you know, this past weekend we you know, won a huge game against Virginia on Saturday night, a big-time game, and came back and played a real good Syracuse game team on Monday, but we were here. We were home. And our guys have practiced and prepared well. And as you get to know your team, how much do you do and how much do you give them, you know, is important. You know, when you – it's kind of like, who are you speaking to? What group, what age, how much can they, how much can you fill their cup? How big is their cup as far as information? And, you know, we're learning more about our team and we're trying to simplify things. So we don't, I tell coaches for years, it's not what you know as a coach, it's what your players know and can instinctively do in a game. So, you know, you can overburden them with information. I think we found a kind of a good level of how to prepare for a game.
Is this team remind you of all the teams you've had? And I don't know if you do this during the course of the year, if you do it postseason when you have time to reflect. Has there been a team in your career at Duke that this team reminds you of in terms of its progress?
No, it's a different team. And, you know, I try never to look in the past. You know, if you look in the past, you should, you know, put in your resignation papers. The moment needs full concentration. And I will say this. This is a – youth-wise, it reminds me of our 82-83 team. And, you know, and that's a long time ago, it develops its own personality. Every team kind of has that, and and for us not to try to make them like another team, but to try to figure out who these guys are. And it's interesting because each week you see something a little bit different. And you have to go with that instead of having preconceived notions about how they should be playing and, you know, just kind of react. I call it running motion offense, making reads all the time with your team. And my staff is, I've got such a great staff that they're able to help me make those reads.
Coach, a young team, as you mentioned earlier, youngest in Power 5, one of the youngest in the country, and a lot of the outside noise will be about postseason and the value of every game from this point forward. How do you talk to your team about that going down the stretch of the regular season and then once you get to Greensboro and then into the postseason?
Well, it's funny when people say the value of a game. That's how you do the whole season. You know, the value of the game is not increased at any time. You should value the game at the highest level every time you play it. So when you get to these points where people say, man, this is the most important game, you've already played that game. You've already rehearsed that game, and you've either won or lost it. We're 11-8 trying to do that. And so we're just going to play it. You know, we're going to play Louisville, and they're really good, and see what happens, and then go forward.
Good stuff from Coach K yesterday, Pac.
He's always insightful. I know this much. He loves the way his team is playing, and they don't even look like the same team from early in February. I don't think anybody in the league right now wants to play Duke, but that game tomorrow is a monster. Louisville looking for their first quad win. The Blue Devils looking to continue this torrid pace to March Madness.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
So much going on. Great weekend of hoops. We got lacrosse. We got baseball. We got the wrestling championships. It's a little bit of everything, Mr. Durham. Great weekend for the ACC.
Is indeed. We've already chronicled the basketball. Don't forget Chris Cotter coming up at 8:15, Rock Harrison at 8:30, and Jakia Brown-Turner in the 9 o'clock hour on this Friday. We have just heard from Coach K from yesterday's show, and a few moments from now you'll hear Leonard Hamilton in our visit from yesterday. Fresh off his win at Miami on Wednesday night, Coach Ham joined us yesterday in the Power Hour as well. But before we get to the visit from yesterday, Pac, Leonard Hamilton's journey has always fascinated me. You know, growing up in Gastonia, starting out at Gaston College, finished at UT Martin. And then, you know, there was this moment with Lake Kelly where, you know, he was going to be a coach and it didn't work out. And next thing you know, he's getting ready to be the great chemical salesman, right? And then out of nowhere, he gets a chance to go to work for Joe Hall. I've always been struck by not only his humbleness, but the way he builds his program, and especially at Florida State, you know, when he came to FSU, it was a little bit of an unknown, don't you think?
He always had the great reputation from a recruiting perspective, but he's been terrific, right? And I think he's the most underrated coach in America as we sit here today. You almost never hear Florida State mentioned when you start rattling off the great teams. And really the only thing missing on that resume is a Final Four run and maybe cut down the ultimate net. And this team has the potential of doing just that.
Well, one thing you're going to find out, ESPN.com senior writer Andrea Adelson has an unbelievable story here about Leonard Hamilton. Yes, he's been in it a long time. He's broken barriers along the way, and along the way has left quite a standard too.
I like this one.
You've been faithful to me, my God,
you've been faithful,
to me.
I enjoy listening to music that has a lot of meaning. When you think about your moral compass, you think about who you are as a person and the decisions that you make. You utilize to the best of your abilities the talents that God has blessed you with. And you really don't have as much to say about the outcome, but you have a lot to say about how you approach the challenges that you have.
Today belongs to Florida State, a capacity crowd at the Tucker Center in Tallahassee, celebrating the first ACC regular season title in school history.
A lot of people attract to Coach Ham because all the hardships and things that he's been through. I mean, he's really done seen it all.
Our turn, that's our motto for this year. And I feel like that goes for us as a program, but also for him. It's his turn to finally get the credit that he deserves and get the praise that he deserves.
People see this like laser stare. Everybody thinks he's maybe angry or something at the time, but it's just his demeanor at that moment to let his players know that we're focused on what we have to do in this moment. That's how he's run his whole life. He didn't come through a coaching tree. He didn't come through just being a great player. Everything he had to do, he had to prove himself.
Leonard Hamilton grew up in Gastonia, North Carolina during segregation. The eldest child in a family of eight, basketball would be his only means for an education. After becoming the first African-American player at the University of Tennessee Martin, he took a position as an assistant coach at Austin Peay under head coach Lake Kelly, helping to lead the Governors to two Ohio Valley Conference championships in three seasons. When rumors of Kelly's candidacy for other jobs arose, Hamilton went to meet with University President Joe Morgan.
I remember exactly what he said. He said, "Leonard, no, I hired you, and you've done a good job, and nothing would make me happier for you to be the head coach at Austin Peay. But I'm retiring in 2 years. I don't know if I'm strong enough at this point politically for you to be the head coach." Those are the words. He didn't say I wasn't going to get the job because I was African American. He didn't say that. But what he implied was that I read between the lines of what he said. Now, and I said, "Thank you." It kind of hit me like a ton of brick that maybe this is what I'm up against. And if I could not be the front candidate for this position and I felt that I had contributed to it, the success, then maybe I was in the wrong profession.
Hamilton quit the next day and took a job at Dow Chemical in Charlotte, North Carolina. But before he could start his new career, he got a call from one of the premier programs in the country.
Lake Kelly called me and he said, "Joe," he said, "I got an assistant that's leaving, and he is a very good young man. And I guarantee he'll work hard for you and be loyal to you."
I told Coach Hall, I said, "Nobody outworked me. I have your players, and I will never get you in trouble." And I said, "But if you don't mind, I'm going back to Charlotte, and if you don't offer me the job, I'm going to be number one chemical salesman in the country." I actually told him those words. The next Monday, he offered me the job. I went from being discouraged that I wouldn't have an opportunity at a Division I program to the number one winningest program in the history of college basketball.
It was at a time that Kentucky had not recruited many black athletes. And Leonard broke that. He gave the players a home away from home. They felt protected playing for Leonard Hamilton. He recruited some of the best athletes in the country.
What Jackie Robinson did for baseball, that's what I equate Jay Leonard Hamilton, what he did for basketball. Being the first African-American assistant at the University of Kentucky, being one of the primary reasons that their program basically went from all Caucasian to predominantly African-American, that's amazing.
Joe B. Hall retired in 1985. Despite 12 years with Kentucky, Hamilton was not granted an interview to replace him. Instead, he became the first African-American head coach in the Big Eight Conference, revitalizing a floundering Oklahoma State program. He would then do the same at Miami, eventually winning a regular season Big East championship. In 2002, he got his third opportunity to turn a college program around, this time at Florida State.
with no time left. The little team that could just did.
The Florida State Seminoles are champions of the ACC for the first time in program history.
After breaking the color barrier at every step of his basketball career, Leonard Hamilton has spent the last two decades becoming the most successful coach in Florida State history and is fifth in ACC history in wins, behind Coach K, Dean Smith, Roy Williams, and Gary Williams.
None of us have went through anything that he's went through, and for him to overcome that and to see where he's at right now, it's inspiring, and it makes you just want to do better and become a better person.
Everybody on his team is wondering why he's not getting credit that he deserves, but we get more bothered by that than he does. So we just tip our hats to him and praise that he keep doing what he's doing.
If you read the data, the numbers say Jalen Hamilton at Florida State basketball is for real. I cannot understand for the life of me why it's taking this long, but I'm glad that at this point in his career, his name is going to be synonymous with winning. But that's not what he cares about.
I don't coach because I need or desire credit. When I hang up my whistle, what I have is credit, Coach of the Year awards, NCAA trips, if that's all I got to show for it, then I've shortchanged somebody. To me, it's more important the opportunity to help young people prepare themselves for later life. I try to have faith that if I do things the right way, the outcome would be to my liking.
Now he has a 2-game lead in the loss column ahead of the field pack going to the final week of the regular season.
They are the team to beat, and North Carolina will try to do that tomorrow. And for the Heels, I would suggest a better effort than what I saw against Marquette. If you see the Louisville game, hey, we may have ourselves a ball game tomorrow on Chapel Hill. But make right. no mistake, Florida State right now is the best team in the ACC.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Al Drummond made history in 1971 when he became the University of Virginia's first African-American basketball player. His presence ensured that every men's basketball program in the ACC was integrated. Packer and Durham honor Al Drummond and all the black athletes that paved the way in the ACC as we celebrate Black History Always here on ACC Network.
Well, I loved those features all week long, and just incredible, inspirational stories all over the place, Wes.
Yep, you bet. And more to come here as we finish up Unity Week. Certainly, Mary McElroy was with us yesterday from the ACC office outlining not only the winter Unity Week, what we had also seen in the fall, and what's yet to come in the spring as well. All good stuff ahead in the Atlantic Coast Conference. We told you going to break, you saw the story of Leonard Hamilton's journey to Florida State. Well, yesterday, the head coach joined us, seemingly just a few hours after wrapping up a road win at Miami. And we asked him right from the top about the great recap of that win against the Hurricanes.
Well, no doubt about that. I love our culture. I love the fact that our guys are focused on cheering for one another. They really have bought in that we win games by committee. Last night was somewhat challenging for us as coaching staff because Tanar Nagam didn't play. Neither did MJ Walker. And then Malik Osmond turns his ankle in the first half. So right. Now all of a sudden, our whole rotation, you down three guys that's worked heavily in your rotation. I'm talking about my leading scorer, Malik Osmond, and a 7-2 Nagam that's really been coming on strong as well. So now we on the road. But I was very proud of the fact that guys stepped up. I mean, even Quincy Ballard, who hadn't played very much, he was 4 for 4 for 5, I believe, from the floor. And then Nate Jack came in and gave us 3 threes. Yeah. Calhoun's been coming on strong. I expect him to have an explosive game anytime. I mean, to have MJ Walker be out and then Calhoun comes in and gets 16 points. I mean, you know, that's strong. But that's who we are. You know, we a team that wins by committee. There's no doubt about that. We consistently keep watching Scottie Barnes continue to grow, making the transition from power forward to to a point guard is really, really good. That's interesting to watch.
How important was kind of the last 10 days for this basketball team to kind of go through the, you know, the Virginia hype, then to go on the road in Miami, to, you know, come off that second pause, to, you know, just go through kind of the obstacles of this weird year? But I get the sense that a little bit like last year, in some respect, your team is starting to kind of climb again. But how much has the last 10 days meant to that climb?
Well, I think that when you talk about the last 10 days, you got to look at where we've been. And we've been pretty consistent with our approach. When we got the season cut short in Greensboro, from that point on, we recognized moving forward, it would be us needing to be matured enough and be prepared for the unexpected, because we were going through something that we'd never been through before. And I just told them that one of three things is going to happen. Somebody's going to be matured enough to handle this in the right way. Somebody will stay the same, someone's going to get worse, and somebody's going to get better. We want to be in the get better position. And the way to do that is concern yourself with that which you can control. And so we at peace, and we every day, our approach has been the same since last March, is just don't worry about all the things and what obstacles we're facing, because we're going to have some. Let's be mature enough to be that team that handles it. And I also told them that this was that we need to be safe. We need to help each other, hold each other accountable for how we conduct ourselves on and off the court, especially on the court. We called each other out. They have consistent meetings with each other, and they're getting in each other's face, and they're not offended. We expect your teammates to make sure that you're always on point. So we have a pretty good culture, and I'm not surprised that we were able, you know, to come through this period. However, you know, we've had our ups and downs. You know, we've lost some games that we're disappointed in. There's no doubt that we didn't play as well. We weren't nearly as focused in some of the games we lost, not to take anything away from the teams that outplayed us. But I think with each loss and with each obstacle, we've grown and improved. And I think we're still moving forward. The good thing about our team, we still got a lot more room for improvement.
I'm sure you saw the score and just shook your head and went, yay, yay, yay. We're going to catch North Carolina's best shot on Saturday, because I guarantee you Roy wasn't expecting a loss with the way their team played. And anytime you guys play North Carolina, especially that first go around in Tallahassee, that was a great basketball game that literally came down the last couple minutes. But you got to figure you're going to catch North Carolina's best shot Saturday, given what's at stake coming off that loss last night to Marquette for the Heels.
Well, when you're dealing with young people, you're going to have those games we just don't play up to your potential. And I was very disappointed, because I would much rather for them to be happy than to be angry. I mean, we know they're going to be motivated. We know that they're going to be motivated, because that's the tradition of Carolina. But we'd much rather for them to be with a smile on their face than a frown on their face, because now we know we're getting not only – we're always going to get the best of North Carolina, but we're getting the best of an angry North Carolina who now is going to regroup, because they were playing as well as anybody in the country for a 3 or 4 game stretch. Now, we all know that. Now, that you can't take that away. They played, they had a downer, they had a dip, just like all teams have dips. But I would much rather for them to win by 25. And then and maybe they could have taken a day off and gone to the ice cream parlor and had a social or something. Right now, I think that's not the frame of mind they're in. They're looking to regroup. And so there's no question that whatever they have in their being, we're going to get the best of North Carolina on Saturday. To be honest with you, and I can say this now, I'm not real sure we could have been successful at Pittsburgh without MJ Walker scoring no points. I mean, he contributed in so many ways. And even last night in street clothes, he had an impact on the game. I mean, he was vocal. He gave us great leadership. I can't say enough about how he's grown as an individual. His best basketball, I still think, is ahead of him.
I think he's going to be playing basketball for a long time.
You know, he helped us there, but he really didn't tell us who he thinks the best player on the team is that we put on the All-ACC ballot. Just thought I'd add that. Leonard Hamilton.
Yeah, I don't think he's worried about that, Wes. I think he's got a bunch of dudes, and he knows it.
Yes, he does.
Listen, when teams are really rolling, it's like, hey, just be quiet, carry a big stick, and just go out there and beat teams. But I am really looking forward to Florida State, North Carolina tomorrow. That should be a good one.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.